Would you consider yourself a happy person? Do you feel happy right now? Are there times that you're happy, times that you're less happy? And look around. Are some people just born happier than others? Is happiness inherent or acquired? Are there things we can do to make ourselves to be more happy, to be more joyous, upbeat, more optimistic? Or are we just hardwired a certain way? Some people despondent, some people lighthearted. You'll be surprised to learn that happiness is something that you can control. So please join me in this important session. Happiness, nature or nurture? Hi, Simon Jacobson here. We'll be speaking about happiness, nature or nurture. This program is dedicated by Camise Parson for many blessings for her and her son. That's a big word, happiness. Do you consider yourself a happy person? Most people will say, at times I'm happy, at times I'm not happy. Some people will say, I'm generally not happy, but once in a while, I may experience something that's called joy. Others say it the other way around. I'm most of the time happy, but of course there are things that happen that can make us sad. Well, the bigger question is, do you have any control over it? Is happiness, joy, something inherent, nature, or is it something acquired, nurture? Due to environment, due to education, due to the home you grew up in, circumstances of your life. In other words, are some people simply hardwired to be more despondent, and others are hardwired to be more light-hearted, more spirited, more optimistic? Different words you can use for it. And again, how much control do we have over this? So you may be surprised to learn that we have total control over it. We don't have control over our circumstances, but how our attitudes will react to them, we have control over. So, of course, how do we even answer a question like this? Whether happiness is nurture or nature, acquired or inherent? You look around, you see people of different sorts, people even may have experienced similar experiences, and still have very different reactions. And just to deepen the question, plot thickens. You see, people grow up with very harrowing and harsh circumstances, and yet are essentially happy people. You see people growing up with very beautiful circumstances, a lot of wealth, success, health around them, and yet they're bitter, angry, sad, despondent, depressed. Now, obviously, we have to qualify that we're not talking here about clinical, anything clinical or medical, which can be a result of chemical imbalances or a result of some things, yes, that can be hardwired. But even there, as we'll learn, we have to define what happiness is. The fact that, for example, a person grieves, God forbid, when there's a tragedy or a loss, doesn't necessarily make them an unhappy person. They still can be a very happy person, but they're now going through an experience that realistically requires and deserves the honor and dignity of grief, dignity of the catharsis that comes through and the healing that comes through mourning or grieving or crying and weeping over something. We're talking about where it's required, not something exaggerated or something imaginary. So let's delve a little deeper into this by looking at who we are. That's really the question. Who are we at heart? And here let's take the two models. You have the model, we'll call the evolutionary biological model. I like to phrase it as the Darwinian-Freudian model. Darwinian as in social Darwinism. And that is that we essentially evolved from lower species. And in turn from even lower species, when I say lower, if you go from the human to the animal to the vegetable to the mineral, so whether it's from a ball of gas, however it's explained, but it's definitely from one species to another, from one form to another. So in that sense, psychologically, we may have developed some more sophisticated tools, but we still have the reptilian mind and brain. We still have our survival instincts. When push comes to shove, we can turn into very selfish and greedy people and even hurt others just for the name of our own self-interest. So if you take the id, the Freudian id, as the core essence of the pleasure principle that drives a person, without the taming and the discipline from the ego and superego, again in Freudian language, then at heart we are essentially driven by self-interest. Self-interest may dictate that you need to care for another. You need to work with others, to collaborate, for coexistence. Survival is also requires love. But it's all around the selfish gene, in the words of Dawkins, in this classic book. So selfishness. The other model is the human beings created in the divine image. And fundamentally, we're transcendent human beings. Spiritual entities in a physical body, on a physical journey. Not physical beings on a spiritual journey. And that the soul is essentially the opposite of selfish, selfless. The soul seeks deeper meaning, deeper purpose, to connect to something greater than itself, beyond itself. So it's the absolute antithetical to the first approach, the diametric opposite. So there you have two models, and you can understand already how each model will dictate, at least to some extent, the level of happiness inherent to that human being. If we're indeed survival of the fittest creatures, so then happiness is determined when we satisfy our needs. When our needs are not satisfied, or when someone else competing with us wins over, then no, you won't be happy. If, however, you're a transcendent being, then happiness is not a result of whether I gained over another or gained period. Happiness is a result of that very search for something beyond. So then happiness is a very natural and inherent part of that journey. And even though it's constantly longing and aspiring, which means there's always going to be a measure of angst, but that's not angst that leads to sadness. That's angst that leads to motivation. There may be existential sadness because you want to reach higher states, but it's very different than the despondence that you'll see when people who see themselves as materialistic beings lose something of their materialistic world. Even as a young child, I remember wondering, asking my father and others, when I read about the Great Depression and how many people who completely were destroyed, and that financially destroyed, literally took their lives. And it always shocked me. Why would someone take their life? Is money everything? You have family, you have a wife, you have children. You have values, you have other things you believe in. Faith, if you have faith. And still somewhat disturbing to hear. But the answer is that when you put all your eggs in one basket, to use investment terminology, and you don't diversify. I don't mean diversifying now your investments, but diversifying your values, and everything is in that one basket, and that's taken away from you. You see your light, you see yourself as a materialistic being, the first model. And then that's taken away from you. What do you have left? Your identity is completely bound up into your materialistic success. and how others look at you. And if that's gone, it's not worth living. As sad as it sounds, as tragic as it is. However, when you do have a diversification, meaning, yes, wealth is a beautiful thing, but you have family, and you have values, and you have your faith, and you have your transcendent experiences. And the more of these baskets you have, so even if one is somewhat compromised, or even taken away, you have plenty of other pillars to build upon and rely upon. So therefore, in a direct result of that, that leads to a happiness, to a certain joy. And even if you're not actively happy, meaning smiling and dancing and celebrating, but there's an internal sense of belonging, eternal sense of calm, eternal sense of peace, inner peace. Which brings me to the next step here. Because that's on a very basic level, fine. It all depends how you see yourself. But let's go further into the very soul of the matter, to use that word. Going back to the question of inherent versus acquired, nature versus nurture. Look at young little children, born. Except for rare instances, which would be an aberration or anomaly, children are naturally happy. They giggle. They're exuberant. They're hopeful. They're always exploring. Yes, of course a child will cry when it's hungry or in pain or tired. But overall, look at the child. There's that just natural joy and happiness. And you see it. It affects us as well as adults. You like to make the child smile. The smile just smiles back. Or the child smiles to you and you smile to the child. It's just that type of, you can even say, contagious happiness and joy. So then when does a somberness, more despondent approach enter into a child's life? It's when adults, so to speak, impose it. When a child starts seeing the adults, the caretakers, parents, others, are in that state, the child starts learning of a different type of reaction. But the natural inherent state is happiness. Why? Because the child is essentially a soulful being. Tell a child that it's $1 billion or lost $1 billion, makes no difference. Child doesn't relate to materialistic gains. Yes, there are material needs to eat, to drink, to sleep, the health. But it's not the driving force. The driving force of a child is transcendence, is to seek out. If a child was completely self-contained in its own survival mode, it wouldn't be exploring. We just sit in one place, either eat or drink or do whatever it has to do. It's constantly seeking and learning. I recently read that in the early stages, the early years of infant years, from birth till around 2-3 years old, every second, 1 million neurons are charging and interacting as the child's brain continues to develop. 1 million. And that will obviously affect the child for the rest of the child's life. As an aside, just tells you what impact adults have. Because the child is not just watching and listening and experiencing. Everything is getting absorbed and etched in the psyche of the child. So yes, if a child is exposed, therefore, to negative feelings, what do you think is going to happen after a while? After a while. Because there's always the resilience. But the natural state is a happy one. Because the natural state of a human being is a soulful one, a spiritual one. And the material world is just a means, a vehicle, tools, instruments. Just like the body is a vehicle to the soul. No one would ever say that the ship tells the captain where to go. It's the captain that tells the ship where to go. So then why is it in so many instances, as we grow into adults, the opposite? Because that's what we learned. That's the easy way. Material world around us is very tangible and very immediate, and that instant gratification feeds into the other voice, the survival voice. Because though there are the two models I described, that doesn't mean that both voices don't exist within us. The question is, who's the real you? And what will you choose? So imagine if we were able to bottle into a formula that exuberance, that enthusiasm, that optimism of a child, the dreaming, the dream aspirations, and combine that with the wisdom and seasoning of an adult, what would you have? You would have a fundamentally joyous person. So in that context, joy or happiness is not a verb but a noun. It's a noun that describes the very personality and nature of one's soul. Happiness as a verb is an action. I'm doing something now that makes me happy. But that's not true happiness. A truly happy person is happy even when they're asleep, even when they're not active, because it's a state of being. You want it to also be active at times, at many times, as much as possible. But just because you don't see a person smiling or you don't see a person celebrating does not mean they're not happy. And the opposite is true. You can look at someone who's dancing and partying and so on, and internally they're miserable. So think of it like a good swimmer. A good swimmer is swimming in the waters. So everything seems nice. Alongside him is swimming someone that's not a good swimmer, or not as good. So as long as things are calm, everything looks equal. They're both swimming along side by side. But over time, you'll see who tires quicker. And more importantly, when there's a storm and suddenly the tide changes, the bad swimmer or the inexperienced swimmer, let's say, will either fight the tide, will not have the experience how to navigate, and they can get exhausted and ultimately drain their resources. God forbid, who knows what will happen. A good swimmer will anticipate and also recognize if something changes, it's not going to fight the tide, the good swimmer, because his strength is navigational. It's not just that he can swim well, he navigates well. And if there's a storm, he'll adjust and be flexible and accommodate. Just like you say the beautiful expression from the sages, a person should always be flexible like a reed and not hard and inflexible like a cedar tree. Because a reed in the wind will bend in the wind, will go with the flow. And a cedar tree may be very strong, but if the wind is strong enough, it could bring it down. You see, expansion bridges are built that way. I remember the first time we took a hike on an expansion bridge and it was shaking, and we were like, and our counselor told us, that's part of the engineering. By shaking, it absorbs and creates a certain dexterity that can carry a lot more weight. If the bridge was so inflexible, so yes, it could carry a certain amount of weight, but if there's enough, it could bring it down. So the idea of swaying, tall buildings also have that small sway. It's a fascinating concept. In other words, a certain flexibility, yielding, can actually make you a lot stronger, especially in martial arts. Far Eastern martial arts is all about that. Not about using your strength, it's about responding, using the other person's strength. Restraint can be more powerful than aggression. But back to our topic here. So the good swimmer, it's a state of being. He knows how to navigate. The same thing, a happy, joyous person. Of course, there'll be moments of sadness, moments of grief, of loss, of death. And you won't see them dancing and celebrating when a person is in pain. But fundamentally, their happiness has not gone away. It's not the verb that action right now requires a certain seriousness, if you wish, certain respect or reverence. But that doesn't mean there isn't fundamental joy even within that. And that's why it can be expected of each of us to be happy. That's why we're told, serve with happiness. You'll say, either I'm happy or I'm not happy. You're talking about circumstances, you're talking about the verb. You're talking about who you are. So what the statement is saying, be happy, you know why? Be you. Be the real you, the soul within you, and that naturally will lead to happiness. Because the soul's requirements are very different than the body's. The soul can be deprived of transcendence, can be deprived of its oxygen, which is its meaning and purpose in life. And then the soul does go into a state of deprivation and feeling missing something. But the soul's approach to it is not because it's about me, it's about something greater. So there's a natural joy even in that, and the soul will do whatever it takes to be able to gain that higher fulfillment, which in turn brings that the joy and happiness. Whereas in the material world, everything is defined by a self-contained state and self-contained. Either you have it or you don't have it. So it's about changing our mindsets, thinking through the eyes of your soul, seeing the world and hearing the world through the eyes and ears of your soul, rather than through the eyes and ears of your body and of your bodily needs and yourself, your selfish self-interest. So when you think about it, it's really a challenge to each one of us. And like an example with the storm, it's hard to build up that type of strength and fortitude while there's a storm. That's why it's important to do it in calm times. You build up and reinforce. So when the challenges of life come, you are strong and ready and flexible and know how to adapt and how to navigate. So it's a challenge to look at ourselves in a new way. In sum, the answer to the question, is happiness inherent or acquired? Is it nature or nurture? It's nature, it's inherent. The real true happiness. In Michelangelo's words that I quote so often, and when asked, how do you sculpt those beautiful angels in the marble, he says, I saw the angels trapped in the marble, and I carved and carved and set them free. Happiness is in the marble. It's right within you. However, it could be trapped in marble or in concrete or in other experiences in life. We have to carve. We have to sculpt. Remove the excess, and that inherent happiness emerges. And that explains why you can see people who are living in circumstances that would seem dire, seem difficult, and yet they maintain a certain level of joy and happiness. And others who have the best circumstances don't. Because it's not about the circumstances, it's about what you do about it, it's about you. It's time for us not to identify by our circumstances, not to identify by external things, identify from the inside out instead of the outside in. And then happiness gushes, emerges. Yes, to have that childlike innocence, the childlike curiosity, the childlike amazement. Maintain that. While recognizing and not being naive, the realities of life, the realities of the world. No one's denying that. But that's where it really comes from. And in very simple terms, how can you begin? Focus on the mission of your life, not on what you're doing, not on what you're accomplishing, and not on your job, and not on the expectations and demands of the here and now, but what's the mission, the higher mission, your higher calling? And do something in that direction. You immediately will be a happier person. I hesitate to say the word immediate because it sounds like instant gratification and just press a button. No. When I say immediately, you'll see, because the focus stops being on yourself, it's on the cause. That right away takes away that edge that defines our self-contained, selfish, greedy consciousness. Immerse yourself in the spiritual spa. Spa as in study, prayer, action, SPA. Cognitive, emotional, and behavioral conditioning. Every day, take a few moments. Read something, study something that takes your mind, not the news, not analysis of the financial world, not from the physical reality. Read something that takes your mind into a higher place, into a greater place. Pray. Listen to a song. Sing a song. something that touches your heart, emotional conditioning. And finally, behavioral, the action. Study, prayer, action, spa. Do something. A little extra charity. Go out of your way to be kind to someone. Share a beautiful thought with some friends, colleagues, or strangers. You could do that even online, so you don't have to necessarily travel anywhere. But be always armed with fulfilling something that's greater than your own needs. You tell me the results of that. That is the fastest and easiest way to discover the inherent angel, happy angel within you. And you're doing the carving of the excess by focusing on that. So may you discover, with the least amount of aggravation, the inner core of your own soul, which is the direct source of all joy and happiness. May you have a happy life, happy in the state of being level, but also happy that it should come out in real actions, in real active ways, the verb, experiencing happy moments, happy times, happy occasions. But even those moments when the happiness may not be completely revealed, you still remain that same great swimmer. You're still that happy soul within, because you know that your life 24/7 is a calling, a higher calling, a higher mission. And that is the greatest source of the deepest, eternal and lasting and sustainable joy and happiness. Thank you. Simon Jacobson here, Meaning for Life Center, meaningforlife.com. Please check us out for this and many other topics. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel as well as to our different offerings. We send out emails, social media messaging, and so on. Take advantage. And of course, share with anyone you see fit. I'd love to hear your feedback, your thoughts, your comments, your suggestions. Be well, be blessed, and be happy.
This program is brought to you by the Meaningful Life Center. Please help us continue our programs. Make even a small contribution at meaningfullife.com/donate.